And now I have the pleasure of speaking with Roger Niello, the co-owner of the Niello Company. And I'm saying it wrong, Niello, right? It's Niello. I'm calling it. I'm like pronouncing it.
Niello is the way they say it in the mother country.
Uh-huh.
If you're in Italy, it's Niello, but it kind of got anglicized, I guess, when my grandfather emigrated.
All right. Well, tell us about, I want to know the history of the Niello Corporation, the entity, the organization, if you don't mind, because a lot of people I don't think know that, but can we get that for Sacramento?
Well, it's not a continuous corporate existence, but it is a continuous family existence.
Okay.
My grandfather, my dad's dad, was an airplane mechanic during World War I, and he became a car mechanic, and he got the Packard service franchise in San Francisco in 1921.
Wow.
And then added cars to it in the late 20s, Packard and Pierce Arrow, and he had a partner named Laurent, so it was Laurent and Niello. Uh-huh. And then Packard went the way of the Hubmobile in the early 50s. And
right.
My dad, after working at a dealership in San Francisco, got the Volkswagen franchise in Sacramento with Wes Lasher. So it was mm-hmm. Lasher, Niello, Volkswagen,
right.
After it had been Laurent and Niello, Packard, Pierce Arrow, kind of an
interesting. I remember buying a Volkswagen there with my parents, I was probably about 6 years old. Yeah,
yeah.
We had a Volkswagen.
It was a while ago.
From you guys. Yeah.
My dad purchased the dealership of the other dealer in Sacramento who passed away,
okay.
And that was when their partnership split. And my older brother Rick and I joined my dad in the early 70s, after I had spent a couple of years in public accounting. And we grew from there, and then I went into politics around 2000.
About 2000.
I had to think about that. And Rick became the CEO, and we grew even more during the last 20 years or
yeah,
so.
Yeah. If you don't mind, did you ever talk to your grandfather about what it was like in the beginning when he founded it?
I met my grandfather, but at an age that I was too young to remember.
Okay.
He died in about 1952. I was only about 4 years old.
Okay. So I'm just kind of wondering, were you competing with like a horse and buggy and things like that back then when
Not
you started?
Not quite. He started
in the 20s?
It was in 1921, and the automobile had pretty much taken over personal transportation by then.
Okay, so obviously it's grown so much. What does Niello look like today in terms of size and scope?
Oh, significantly bigger. We've got about 700 employees, 12 dealerships, 12 franchises in Sacramento and Placer County.
Wow. So that how many employees would that mean?
About 700.
700 employees across all those locations. And I have to ask you, let's talk about being in the car business. So you were in there for so long. What was it like jumping in when you were younger? And, you know, what prompted you to exit and go
well,
do politics?
Well, I kind of grew up with the car business because my dad was a dealer. And I worked there summers, did all sorts of different jobs. Was a service writer one summer as a college student. That was an interesting thing. And then my education is accounting. And after 3 years or so in public accounting, my dad had grown from one location to two, and he wanted a controller. And he said, I'd like you to come to work. If you don't, I'm going to hire a controller, but mm-hmm. I'd like it if you didn't. So I thought, well, okay. So we moved back to Sacramento, and I started then and transitioned into running dealerships. I was responsible for two of the dealerships, the BMW store and the Volkswagen store, and we had Lincoln Mercury at the time, don't anymore. But in the late 90s, all along I was pretty interested in politics, but then in 1998, Dave Cox, my good friend on the Board of Supervisors, was running for the State Assembly. He was going to win, and so he and I started talking about his successor, and we decided it should be me. And so I jumped into politics at that point.
Well, it doesn't pay as well. Why jump into that? It seems like being in the car business would be a heck of a lot more fun.
Oh, going into going into politics cost me a heck of a lot of personal income. But I did not give my ownership up, so I still own 1/3, and that's obviously a legacy asset for me. But politics pays significantly less. But I'd done well in the car business, and I was comfortable personally, and and I really enjoyed politics and policy, and I never regretted making the change. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So what's life look like today? What consumes you today?
Well, I was termed out of this. I was on the Board of Supervisors for 6 years, in the State Assembly for 6 years, and then we have this thing called term limits. I was termed out, and in the last, 10 years now, I've had two full-time jobs outside of the car business. I ran the Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce for 3 years, and then El Dorado County hired me to run one of their agencies through a transition, so I worked for them on contract, and then the person that essentially took my place took over as I walked out the back door. Other than those 3.5 or so years, I've just been involved on a few boards, mostly higher education and economic development oriented.
Okay, so the Board of Supervisors versus State Assembly, obviously one is a state position and the other is more local.
Right.
And the city of Sacramento itself, it's its own little microclimate, I suppose, in terms of politics, that's much different than the overarching, you know, the state. So I can imagine that, so being on the State Assembly, I mean, that seems like a huge change from being a supervisor.
It is, and they're quite different jobs.
Is one less rewarding? Because it seems like the local one would almost be more rewarding.
It is, and I liken it to being a big fish in a small pond versus being a small fish in a big pond.
Right.
The former being local and the latter being state. And you talk about the political environment, and you mentioned the city of Sacramento. Well, it's within the region of the greater Sacramento area and also within Sacramento County. And the politics are quite different within the city than they are the unincorporated area of the county. And so I represented the county. And none of my, very little piece of my district included the city of Sacramento, North Natomas. The difference is the Board of Supervisors is the executive, legislative, and judicial branch of county government.
Oh, interesting.
Handles all of the county executive reports to the Board of Supervisors. So we have very direct, as a supervisor, very direct control over the organization of the county. And when we call up the head of the Department of Transportation, they come.
Yes.
Now, as a state assemblyman, if I call up the head of the Department of Transportation, not that they aren't accommodating, but they don't report to me. They report to the governor.
Yeah.
So it's a difference. So you can accomplish a lot more within your arena in local politics than you can in state politics. And, of course, state politics is much more partisan. People wear uniforms, Republican uniforms, Democrat uniforms.
Yeah.
Local politics is nominally nonpartisan, but people are still registered. But it's a little bit different from a partisan standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. So thinking about tying this back to winning and entrepreneurship and Sacramento a little bit, obviously you have this huge legacy with your family business. You've had the career CPA background. And I always wonder, who should get paid more, the controller of a company or the person in charge of sales? Let's call it the director of sales, because both have such important roles. Now, you actually were probably part of both, running dealerships but starting off as a controller. Who's more valuable?
Well, as an accountant, I would definitely say that the controller is much more valuable. But the fact of the matter is, a successful business operation needs several disciplines in order to be successful. You have to be able to sell your product. You have to have employees that are competent in doing that. You have to have people who can motivate people to do that. You also, it's really important that you have people that watch what they're doing and count the beans, as we say. We accountants were bean counters, and control the operation. And so I would have to say they are equally important.
A politician, it sounds like.
There
almost.
You go.
But you're kind of kind of like you've obviously got one of those personalities that I would say not prototypical or not the stereotypical accountant, CPA. I mean, you do have sort of a sales side of your personality that sort of comes out. When I met you the other day, a lot of charisma and that kind of thing. Not what accountants are most known for.
Oh, come on. Now, I've got a lot of friends who are engineers. My daughter-in-law is an engineer with RT. And I used to say this from behind the dais when I was with the county, that engineers are people who are good with numbers, but they just don't have the personality to be an accountant. Now the real quote, which I stole, was that accountants are people who are good with numbers, but they just don't have the personality to be a statistician. But the fact of the matter is, I know a lot of accountants that have moved into general management and entrepreneurial positions and are pretty outgoing. Not as outgoing as me, of course.
Yeah, no chance. But okay, so I have multiple CPAs on my team as well. We have an outsourced accounting group where we help entrepreneurs do their bookkeeping, their back room. And our accountants are, they're more like you, I'd say, personality-wise. They're pretty really outgoing, maybe not quite so as charismatic, but they're good with people. So it's interesting. You can't always judge a book by its title, I suppose, huh?
Right. But, an engineer, again, they are good with numbers, but they just can't be an accountant.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Nilo, right? You guys have had some serious success, even in the last several years. What's key to winning at Nilo? I mean, obviously, you got a great product, but it's not just great cars.
Well, it's a couple of things. First of all, it's knowing your core competency and sticking to it. And our core competency has been in the upper end of the market. And when you look at our array of franchises, that's pretty much what we have stuck to. That's number one. Number two is just having a great crew of employees. Mm-hmm. That's always been very important to us, from my father on down. You don't get anywhere if you don't treat your employees right. And so having that competent, dedicated organization to whom you're dedicated to, because customer treatment will only be as good as employee treatment, I'd say that those are the things that are really kind of the essential ingredients to success.
So there's brothers that own this entity, and then somebody stayed back and is running this. That's Rick. That's your brother, Rick.
Rick,
that right?
Yeah, and David is involved with the operations too.
Okay, so
that's my younger brother.
What kind of? But Rick is the he's
the
CEO.
CEO.
What kind of leader is he?
I think he reflects the ethic of the family, and that is, he is very dedicated, obviously, to growth, and that's important, but to developing a strong group of employees, strong general managers, strong sales managers, people on the line, salespeople and service writers that are very good with customers. That probably drives him more than anything, and profits lead from that.
Yeah. So third generation success story. It's an interesting thing, because they say, the adage shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, and thinking about yours is thriving now in the third generation. I'm wondering the key to that, and then also is there a fourth?
There is. My son is works in the IT department, and Rick's son, Derek, is now the company controller. He has a finance background, and Rick's son-in-law, Matt. My son is Matt, and his son-in-law is Matt.
Okay.
Matt is involved in sales management, so we do have some of the following generation.
Love it. How do they get along? Because sometimes cousins and brothers, brothers-in-law, it starts watering down from just the three brothers, where you three. So how does everybody get along?
We all hate each other.
Do you guys get together on family Christmas and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, not the whole family on the big holidays, because there's just too many of them. But all of those in the next generation get together well. I think a part of our success, Rick, David, and I, when we have worked together, was when we have issues, bury the egos. Mm. And there are times when we disagree, but we bury the ego. We don't get too hung up on what it is that we want to have happen. And we've, Rick, David, and I have always worked together very well that way.
So growing up, who's the oldest?
Rick is a lot older than me, 22 months.
Can he still beat you up?
I'm not going to answer that. My younger brother, David, is 6 years younger
than
I
am. Okay, so he's probably the toughest today, then, I would assume. Huh?
I'm not going to say that.
Okay, so just thinking about, you know, again, we're trying to help the entrepreneurial community. You've seen Sacramento change. You were out there. We were out at Fizz the other day, a startup, and helping other startups. You're investing into this community. But just how are you, what's your vision for the future of Sacramento? How have you seen it change?
Well, my vision for the future of Sacramento, especially having been involved in economic development here for probably 30 years, is that we grow to develop a much more vital private sector economy. We're heavily dependent upon government employment here. It's about 30%. When the military bases were open, it was even more than that. Mm-hmm. But the closure of those have been great economic development opportunities for us, as I always felt that that they would be. And the Greater Sacramento Economic Council, I think, is doing a great job of putting Sacramento on the map elsewhere. Having the Kings here has exposed our community elsewhere. And so my vision for the growth is things like the Centene location here, mm-hmm. as well as the burgeoning economy we have in smaller startups, some of which are moving from the Bay Area because they can't afford it there. Mm-hmm. 2 to 10 employee companies become 100 to 1,000 employee companies.
Yes.
And my vision is that we grow like that.
Yeah, I have this fascination that if enough of the most successful people in the community, like yourself, help enough of the ambitious up-and-comers, that we can ignite an entrepreneurial revolution. We won't always be so dependent on the government. And I feel like the Kings, definitely them committing, has caused a few more people to commit. The city itself is committing. And so I'm feeling like we're coming together a little bit.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I've participated in the sort of emerging venture capital market here locally. I'm an investor with Moneta, which mm-hmm. I believe you are.
I am, yes.
And the Northern California Investment Funds, John Gregory and his group.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Invested in both of their funds. And while we aren't quite the size of the Silicon Valley groups, they might, you know, we look at $50 million of Moneta as being huge. Yeah. To them, that's a spit in the bucket, actually. But it's very important to the development of the area. And so I hope to profit personally from the growth as well as the region profiting from it.
So what are you excited about now? So you've had this successful career. You've done so many things. What's next for you? Because the most successful people, they never quite shut it off from my experience.
I'm going to Disneyland.
All right. After the Mark Haney Show, going to Disneyland. Celebrate. It's like winning the championship.
Yeah. I don't have any specific plans. Okay. I enjoy the involvement of the volunteer boards that I'm mm-hmm. on. Those two sort of temporary full-time gigs that I had, I enjoyed doing that. Maybe another one of those will come along. But at the age of 70, I don't have...
You're not 70 years old.
Oh,
come on.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I don't have any, you know, big ambitions for when I grow up, but I'm enjoying the activities I'm involved in, and I see it sort of continuing like that.
Okay, so final question. We're always trying to ask a question that will help the next one in line, the next Roger Nilo. If you had somebody out there that maybe is that younger ages, maybe they're even working in the family business a little bit, advice to them if they also have these dreams of the significant success.
Well, I've found being involved in the community has been very helpful for me. It's led to opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise. When I was in the business, I was involved in lobbying, if you will, in Washington, D.C. for free trade issues. We are obviously largely import and dependent upon that. When I joined the Chamber of Commerce, I became very involved in all sorts of community activities beyond the Chamber of Commerce, which led to politics, obviously, but it also led to me getting to know a lot of people that I wouldn't otherwise know, and that just broadens your horizon. Never narrow your horizon, always broaden it. I speak to student groups fairly frequently, and I always tell them, whatever you think you're going to be doing when you graduate from college, you might be wrong, and if you look out 5 years, you definitely will be wrong. Don't forestall any opportunities to yourself, and keep learning and keep getting to know more people.
I love it. Roger Niello, Niello Company, group of car dealerships, a guy that's given so much back to our community. Thanks for sharing your story today.
Thank you very much, and the same to you, Mark.
Thank you.